You care about helping others learn and grow, and now you can make an even greater difference. The Ohio State University's fully online master's in applied behavior analysis prepares you to help learners with disabilities thrive. You'll develop the skills to use evidence-based interventions that enhance learning outcomes and foster independence, all in a flexible format designed for working professionals. With growing demand for board-certified behavior analysts, this online program helps you prepare for what's next without pausing your life. If you're ready to expand your impact, Ohio State is ready to support your next step. Visit go.osu.edu/behavioranalysis.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. The boys are fired up. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. There is so much to talk about in March. Hodge, imagine that.
I know. This is usually a dead spot on our calendar. I was looking at our analytics just yesterday, and for the same week of March this year relative to last year, our traffic is up, I think it's 60%. So clearly the good people across this country are loving all of the news that is going on in Canadian football, and they're staying engaged. They're staying fired up. And I mean, before you know it, time flies. We're going to be in training camps in the Canadian Football League, but lots to do and get done before that. And we got a bunch of it lined up on today's show.
One day I hope to be as excited about anything as Justin Dunk gets about Canadian quarterback news, because let's make no bones about it, folks. That's exactly why he's hooting and hollering at the top of the show today.
Hey, you guys are excited too. We had a great discussion off air that we're now going to bring on air, but full credit to you, JC. You were up for doing a podcast. Hodge was on the fence. We held him down and forced him to do it, didn't we, Hodge?
I've actually been participating in Three Down Nation against my will for 10 years now. It's true. They've got me locked in a room. Let me out. Ah.
That's pretty close to the AI video that CFL News put out in terms of what happens behind the scenes on the Three Down Nation podcast. What was that?
That was very bizarre, but I liked it.
I watched it. My first impression, like, your nephew's really gone downhill from the last time he burst into the podcast.
Oh, that was great.
I thought at first, I was like, wait a second. Is he referencing that time when my nephew was singing, walking into my room that I was recording in? But I'm like, no, that's a dragon or whatever that thing was. And it was in my new setup. It wasn't the old setup.
Justin Dunk, of course, does not watch fantasy shows or play Dungeons and Dragons or anything of that nature. He thinks goblins are dragons.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was a goblin.
There, we got the expert. What's that show that you love so much? Lord of the Rings?
I'm actually not a huge Lord of the Rings guy. I think Game of Thrones. I was a big Game of Thrones guy. There's no goblins in Game of Thrones, though.
I would have never known that if you didn't just tell me.
Justin loves Game of Thrones. He just would need to watch it fully recast of Canadian quarterbacks. I don't really know Game of Thrones, but like the Jon Snow would be like Jonathan Senecal, and then you would have who's the biggest guy? That would be Taylor Elgersma bringing his Dolph Lundgren. I also don't know Rocky, but a Game of Thrones that's all Canadian quarterbacks, that would be up Justin Dunk's alley.
I will say I did have an eagle-eyed person within a CFL front office who texted me a couple weeks back after one episode of the podcast and asked me if I have a sword behind me, which of course I do. I have a replica Game of Thrones sword right here. Good spot.
That is nice. It does fit your mystique, JC.
Mystique is an interesting way to put it, but yes.
JC's aura, his Dungeons and Dragons aura.
In fairness, I've never played Dungeons and Dragons. I don't have enough friends for that.
Played Quidditch, though. Wait, you gotta have friends to play Quidditch.
I did play Quidditch for a time. I did make a ton of friends in Quidditch. I was too physical. They didn't like me. I was out there hitting people. They were like,
"I sent you straight lay to off Azkaban.
This is supposed to be fun."
All right, boys, let's get going talking some football. And yo, shout out to our dedicated listeners and viewers. There was one commenter on YouTube that was like, "I got my drink in hand, ready for some football talk." Well, you know what? We are too. We appreciate the dedication, the listenership, the viewership, the readership, as Hodge noted, with the analytics. So let's get it rolling, boys. Today we're discussing Canadians and some former CFL players who signed new NFL contracts.
Tailgating coming to Mosaic Stadium in Regina.
Braylon Addison announcing his retirement.
Sergio Castillo winning community awards.
And the Calgary Stampeders signing their franchise left tackle to a contract extension. But first,
Dunk, you reported today that Wilfrid Laurier quarterback Cal Wither has transferred to the University of Maryland, returning to the NCAA after one season in U Sports. How did that move come about?
I talked to Cal Wither personally in January, I believe it was. Got to make sure I got my timeline straight. I think that's right, when Todd Galloway was officially introduced as the new head coach at Wilfrid Laurier University, leading the football program. And he said he was committed to Laurier. But as the winter went along, fellas, it's now been deleted. But Callum Wither posted on his X account that he had received an offer from the University of Maryland. I checked in with some sources. It sounded like Wither was still committed to Maryland. But from what I've heard that went on behind the scenes, it seems like Maryland was going after him and recruiting him to go down there continuously. And then you had the fact that Wither had already been down in the NCAA, but never did dress at Ohio University. And I think you have to look at so many factors here, and there's a great discussion to be had. But if you're Cal Wither staring this decision in the face, you came up to Laurier, you had a great season, first team All-Canadian, broke the Laurier single season passing touchdown record, led U Sports in passing touchdowns. You were a great quarterback on the field for them. Probably should have won a Yates Cup, but that's perhaps a discussion for another day. You had a really, really good year. Attracted interest from the NCAA. And there's the factor that I don't think a lot of people in U Sports are comfortable talking about, but it goes by the three letters NIL. And when you start talking to people and understand the situation, Maryland, as you noted, JC, didn't have another quarterback on the roster other than their freshman who started for them last year, who was a bona fide four-star recruit, Malik Washington, that had any starting experience. So the Terrapins clearly missed out on that position in the transfer portal. That's absolutely been like the wild, wild west with NIL. So I think they did a smart thing, looked up to Canada and said, okay, this kid is the best kid in the country. Let's go after him, put the full court press on him. offer him some NIL money and the opportunity to at least compete to be our backup. I think if you just look at the depth chart, yes, Wither wasn't in the offense at Maryland up until this decision, but I think he's probably the odds-on favorite to be the backup, that a lot of it made sense for Wither to make what I believe, and I actually think this is true, a difficult decision. If you're Callum Wither, you're sitting there looking at Taylor Elgersma, who won a Het Crichton Trophy in 2024 and was able to parlay that into a legitimate opportunity with the Green Bay Packers in training camp, played three preseason games, and is still garnering NFL interest. I'm not going to go too far down that road, but if you're Wither, I think you have to look at that. Full credit to Michael Faulds, who is now the Western University head coach, for helping develop Elgersma and then Wither, and specifically Todd Galloway, who called every single offensive play for Taylor Elgersma while he was at Laurier. And the same can be said now for Cal Wither. He called every offensive play for Cal Wither during that standout 2025 season. So if you're Wither looking at it, you're thinking, okay, I can have a legitimate shot at the pros here if I put another great season together at Laurier, perhaps even the NFL. But it's hard when you're a kid like that, 23 years old, heck, anybody, to turn down NIL money that's being thrown at you. So I think there are so many layers to this decision. JC, I would imagine, is going to have a great take on it. We even got a take out of John Hodge. So I'll send it over to you, Mr. Canadian quarterback hater.
I don't know how I got the title of Canadian quarterback hater just because I don't want to talk about Taylor Elgersma for 10 hours every single day until I blew in the face and vomiting. But look, Cal Wither was the Het Crichton Trophy front runner for 2026. There's no doubt about that. I don't think there's odds on the Het Crichton Trophy anywhere, but if so, they would have been very, very short for Cal Wither winning this award. He threw for 2,500 yards with the Golden Hawks last season, 26 touchdowns, 4 picks, was named first team All-Canadian. The only reason he didn't win the Het Crichton Trophy in 2025 was because his star receiver, Ethan Jordan, now a member of the Ottawa Redblacks, won it instead. And the Het Crichton can be a little bit of a legacy award. It was Ethan Jordan's last season last year, whereas everyone assumed Cal Wither would get another. That has now, of course, changed. And look, I think this is a good decision for Cal Wither, right? Cal Wither's future as a professional probably is going to be in the CFL ranks, if anywhere. And he's already shown, in my opinion, what he can do on the three down field, right? He spent the first 3 years of his collegiate career sitting on the bench at Ohio. He's now had the chance to play a full season. He stayed healthy. He played very well. And look, I if he went out and improved on those numbers, maybe that raises his CFL stock a little bit. Maybe there's even a Taylor Elgersma situation where all of a sudden NFL teams are looking north going, wow, this kid can sling it. He can throw. But Cal Wither doesn't have the 6'5", 235-pound prototypical frame that Elgersma does. So if I'm Cal Wither and I'm getting the opportunity to make a bunch of money right now, and we don't know the value of this NIL deal, but to me, I think it's the best of both worlds. I get to go back down to the States. I get to make a ton of money, which is not guaranteed at the pro level. We've seen many Canadian quarterbacks in the last few years make it in the CFL and become starters. Obviously, Nathan Rourke did so back in 2020, eventually becoming a starter in 2022. We've seen Trey Ford come into the league in 2022 and be a spot starter for the Edmonton Elks, starting stretches of games. It's possible he's the heir apparent to Bo Levi Mitchell. We've also seen guys like Jonathan Senecal, who were tremendous players in their own right at the U Sports level, who really didn't get much of an opportunity. Seventh round pick last year out of the University of Montreal, played for the Alouettes for like, I think, two series in the preseason and then cut and gone, right? So if I'm Cal Wither, how can you possibly argue with going down and getting paid right now when the alternative is, hey, show scouts that you can do the thing that you already did. You just did it in 25, right? I think this is a good decision. And some people, I don't know, maybe they look at this as like a failure or a shortcoming, like, oh, U Sports is losing its quarterbacks to the NCAA. I think it's almost a good advertisement for U Sports, the same way that it is when top CFL players sign in the NFL. And also, this happens to every other level of collegiate football. Like, if you're an FCS school, you're losing guys to the FBS. If you're a D2 school, you're losing guys to the FCS, right? Like, this happens even at the Division I level. If you're not Power 4, then you're losing guys to the Power 4, right? This happens, especially in the modern era of college football. And look, I think there's a lot to be changed and improved upon to fix a lot of the problems that have arisen the last few years in college football. But you can't hate the player, right? You can just hate the game. Cal Wither didn't design the rules. He's taking advantage of them. I think it's a smart thing for him to do.
I think you raised some really interesting points there, Hodge, and I don't disagree with all of them. I do want to preface my comments here by saying I never begrudge anybody for going out and getting paid, right? We don't know what the financials of this deal are, NIL related, with Maryland. But if it's a substantial amount of money, good on Cal Wither for going out and getting that, because that's never guaranteed in life. It's certainly not guaranteed in football. But with that said, anytime you're getting a benefit like money, there are things that you lose at the same time. And the reality that I see here is that Cal Wither is hurting his shot at professional football in exchange for this opportunity at Maryland, because he does not have what I would say is a convincing path to the field. Malik Washington was a 4-star recruit. He started the entire season as a true freshman. They've committed to him and to the tune of a bunch of money to get him to stay there instead of entering into the transfer portal this offseason. He is going to be the Terrapins starter going forward. So unless he gets hurt, you're going to be holding a clipboard for him. And I don't think holding a clipboard helps him in the CFL. It certainly doesn't help him in the NFL. If you had stayed at Laurier and put together another fantastic season, won a Heck Crichton trophy, put up bonkers numbers, I think not only could you have risen in the CFL draft process, which, yes, may not matter in terms of dollars and cents that much because those contracts are slotted, but would certainly matter in terms of how invested a team feels into you. But I think you would have had a legitimate chance at a Taylor Elgersma situation because Elgersma went before you. It's no longer a situation where nobody has ever heard of Wilfrid Laurier University. They just have. We saw that situation play out at the Senior Bowl in Packers training camp. Going forward with all the tryouts, it's now a more familiar name than it's ever been. And if you're putting up even better numbers than Elgersma did, and you're winning a Heck Crichton, which Elgersma told me point blank that he understood was his only way at getting a professional football career as a Canadian quarterback, then I think you built a compelling resume to get some investment on either side of the border. With this current deal, yes, you may still get picked in the CFL, but in all likelihood, you're not going to play very much next season. That will be, in all likelihood, your final collegiate season because it's his last season of eligibility, barring any appeal to the NCAA or legal action. And you will have not helped your stock at all if it is indeed your intention to pursue a pro career.
There's so many different directions to go, fellas, but I think one of the focuses should be to drill down on something Hodge alluded to. This is an actual positive for U Sports because yet again, and we know it well, it shows that the talent level on the field is real. People want to be all goo-goo gaga over the NCAA. Well, the NCAA, a team in a Power Four conference, the Big Ten, it should be noted, came and plucked this kid from Canada because they thought he was good enough to be on their roster and likely be, if he can compete well enough, the backup quarterback to a guy that was a true freshman and, as you laid out very well, JC, started every single game last year for Maryland. I think that's an absolute positive. Where it hurts U Sports is these teams just don't have the financial resources to be able to compete to keep these players. And that's not a slight at U Sports. It's just the reality. But if we focus on the positive, the absolute overwhelming positive is the fact now, and it's just not Cal Wither. It's a whole bunch of other players. You know, Devin Cromwell, for example, in this draft. Gio Vassaro, if I'm saying that properly, would be another one. There's been guys other years that have started in U Sports football. Dean Leonard might be one of the best examples. Started in U Sports football with the University of Calgary, went down to Ole Miss, got drafted, and just re-signed with the Los Angeles Chargers. Tavius Robinson, another example. Guelph, Ole Miss, NFL with the Baltimore Ravens. There's a growing list. So I think it is an absolute positive. And it makes me think that, you know, once again, we need to even tell Canadian football fans that the talent in U Sports football is right there with the NCAA. I'm not saying player for player, but there are a number of players now, and the list is getting longer and longer every year, that are drawing interest from Power Four schools in the NCAA. That's exactly where Leonard and Robinson went. SEC, Southeastern Conference, the conference that everybody used to say was the best. Perhaps the balance of power has shifted toward the Big Ten, but either way, Power Four conference school looks around after the transfer portal is over and is like, we got to go get this kid from Canada. So I do think that people need to understand that talent. As for Callum Wither and his decision that we're dissecting here, like, imagine being 23 years old and the amount of pressure that is on this decision. It's not an easy decision. Hodge and JC have laid out the different angles very well. There's so many different angles to it. If I stay at Laurier, if we put ourselves in Cal Withers' shoes, if Cal Withers stays at Laurier, to JC's point, has another great year, throws for almost 30 touchdowns or perhaps over, passes for perhaps 3,000 yards, and I'm talking about collectively, including the playoffs, goes to a Vanier Cup, wins the Heck Crichton Trophy, maybe he does get an NFL shot. I don't think that's necessarily out of the question. According to at least the bio, he's around 6'4", and I've stood beside him multiple times and seen him in person. I actually think he's pretty close to that. He would need to put on some weight. You talk to scouts, they definitely say that he's on the skinnier side, but I think he's training and trying to do that. So from that standpoint, if you're Cal Wither and your ultimate goal is to play professionally, it's a very difficult decision. You go down to Maryland, and we've seen guys, I think, on the other side of it, JC, to be fair, players who have gone down to the NCAA and not played very much, been held in higher regard by CFL scouts compared to guys who have been on the field their entire career in U Sports. So each case is just so different. But I think when you start to look at all the layers of this from Cal Withers' perspective, it is such a difficult decision. Really, and I hesitate to use this word, but the one possibility, I don't want to say guarantee, is that you've had a bunch of cash been put in front of your face. And yes, the NIL is the wild, wild west, but it seems like in all likelihood that you're going to get that money. That how could you turn that down? You have 1 year of eligibility in all likelihood, as JC said, left. And you got this money in front of you. You got a Big Ten school in a Power Four conference, I could even say probably a Power Two conference, because that's really what it is now, Big Ten SEC, offering you that kind of coin to be the backup quarterback and potentially have a chance to get on the field if the starter gets hurt. Man, it's just such a different decision the more that you really drill down on.
I think you raise a really valid point when it comes to scout perceptions of this move, because I think back to another guy who went south of the border after starting his career at U Sports, who wasn't on the list that you rattled off there, Isaiah Adams, when he was coming through the draft in the same year as Theo Benedict and Giovanni Manu. And one of the conversations I had at the time with some scouts was, well, Isaiah Adams, he went down and challenged himself. Theo and Gio both had opportunities after deferring their CFL draft to potentially chase an NCAA offer, and decided to stay for an additional year at UBC. And there were some people that felt that should be held as a knock against them because they didn't want to chase that competition like some of those other guys that you've mentioned who did bet on themselves and try to make an attempt, whether successful or not, at becoming legitimate players in the NCAA. Now, I think Withers' situation is a little bit different because, for all intents and purposes, he is going down there, as we understand it, to be a backup. It's not an open competition. There's not multiple spots for him to compete with people to do. There seems to be an incumbent established starter who is going to get the opportunity, barring horrific play or injury, to maintain it with the Terrapins. And so you can start to see this in maybe a different light. Maybe this is a guy who's looking at the money instead of looking to be on the field. Like, scouts can twist a decision any way that they wish to in order to justify how they're going to view a player. And I think there are valid reasons to see this as a kid who is betting on himself and saying, I want to succeed in the NCAA like I didn't get to the first time around. And there are reasons to say that this is somebody who's turning down an opportunity to legitimately play football for something that could well amount to standing on the sideline, and different people are going to see it differently.
Quick question. Do scouts scout for free, or do they get paid?
They don't get paid enough, Hodge.
I'm not going to disagree with that, but like, I think it's kind of silly in almost any circumstance to fault a young person for making money when the alternative is doing their job for free. So I stand pretty firmly on that side. And honestly, look, yeah, it's possible Cal Wither doesn't throw a pass with the Terrapins. And I'll use this as an example. It bleeds right into our next segment. Jude Onivasaro was a 2-time first-team All-Canadian with Manitoba Bisons, won the JP Metris Trophy as the top offensive or defensive lineman in all of U Sports in 2024, went down to Purdue, another Power Four school, and did not start a single game for the Boilermakers. Played a little bit in their last game against Indiana, the team that then, of course, put on to win the national championship game. Giordano Vassaro is certainly going to be a first-round pick in the CFL draft. And right now I'm mocking him to go number one because nobody cares that he didn't play at Purdue. They're going, wow, this guy is brilliantly smart. He's high character. He's a good athlete. He's an excellent player. He's going to start in our league for 10 years. So who gives a rip if the guy is starting? You can get paid, you can go, and you can make money. Because guess what? People with jobs don't do them for free. That's why they're called jobs. Being a student athlete, especially a quarterback, is a demanding job. Why would anybody do it for free when they can do it to get paid?
There's two things I want to push back on there, just separating the two situations, because you raise a valid point with Vassaro. I think it's easy to draw parallels, but quarterback is different, right? Cal Wither has only started, 10 games in his entire collegiate career? You want to see guys who have carried offenses for multiple seasons, who have dozens of starts under their belt. That's a requirement in many NFL organizations, and it's something that CFL teams look for as well. If Wither doesn't start another game, you know, I'm not sure that 10 game sample size is enough to convince you, as good as it was, to bet on that kid. And the other element is we have seen dynamic Canadian quarterbacks who have blown up U Sports ranks, similar to what Cal Wither did, not get CFL opportunities or get middling CFL opportunities that were pulled out from underneath them far too quickly. It is not an easy thing to do when you have any knock against you whatsoever versus along the offensive line. I think there's far more appetite to lean on the previous film and to dismiss that one season where he wasn't playing at Purdue as a situational anomaly. Quarterback's just different.
How many collegiate games did Drew Brown start, real quick? Was he a starter? Did Drew Brown start in college? Just a question. No? No. No, he didn't. Not full-time.
Some games.
He started some games, but I'm just making my point. Go ahead,
Justin. He started several seasons at was it Hawaii, wasn't it? Before losing out to Taylor Cornelius, which is perhaps a red flag.
Let me just point out, Isaiah Adams went to Wilfrid Laurier University. And I think to look at the money aspect of this, fellas, we've seen Ryan Rigmaiden, the BC Lions GM, talk about it, how BC has 12 quarterbacks on their neg list, and several of them have already made millions of dollars, if not getting close or over the $10 million mark. If you're Cal Wither, how much does it take to get you to leave that situation at Laurier? Because I think it's fair to assume, I don't usually like doing this, but that Malik Washington is making, what, at least $1 million per year likely at Maryland? Power Four school, Big Ten conference. So to be his backup, I would think it would be fair to speculate that Cal Wither is going to be in at least the hundreds of thousands of dollar range. So let's pose this to Hodge first. JC, I know you usually need time to think about things. What's your number, Hodge? 100,000, 250,000. If you're Cal Wither, pretending to be Cal Wither, how much does it take you to get to leave Laurier for Maryland?
$1.
You care about helping others learn and grow, and now you can make an even greater difference. The Ohio State University's fully online master's in applied behavior analysis prepares you to help learners with disabilities thrive. You'll develop the skills to use evidence-based interventions that enhance learning outcomes and foster independence, all in a flexible format designed for working professionals. With growing demand for board-certified behavior analysts, this online program helps you prepare for what's next without pausing your life. If you're ready to expand your impact, Ohio State is ready to support your next step. Visit go.osu.edu/behavioranalysis.
Really?
That's straight up disrespectful.
He's already shown he can dominate the U Sports ranks. Even if he went to Maryland for free, if he, with through injury or poor play, gets a chance to see the field and dominates, he is suddenly in a position to make generational money on an NFL contract. So why would you even need a big payday to go down there? Like,
I don't know if he'd definitely be in a position if he only plays a couple games.
I'm saying if he, let's say game three, the starter goes down, Cal goes in, and over the next seven, he throws for 2,100 yards, you know, 28 touchdowns and three picks. I'm not saying this is happening, but
perhaps
just a hypothetical.
He's a late round pick if that happens. If.
Yeah, in which case you are guaranteed hundreds of thousands of dollars on through the NFL, and you'll bounce around. And guess what? The CFL will still take you. Like, this is what the messaging we're getting from Ryan Rigmaiden and from CFL teams is they're essentially saying, yeah, we are in a real tough spot when it comes to recruiting quarterbacks. Like, I use Drew Brown as an example. Drew Brown is undersized and did not start at the end of his college career. He started a few games at Oklahoma State, but he was largely a backup. 20 years ago, Drew Brown does not play in the CFL. Now, Drew Brown is a good CFL player and he's improved a ton. I'm glad he's in the CFL. But the point that I'm illustrating is 20 years ago, he's not in the CFL. Why? Because the CFL would say, we don't need to bring in a guy who was a backup. We have enough guys who were college stars.
For the
record, the CFL is not in that boat anymore. What they're essentially saying, they're saying it a nicer way than this, but what they're essentially saying is we are desperate for quarterbacks. Period. So if you're Cal Wither, why are you going, oh, if I did this, I could really upset some CFL teams who would probably take me anyway. So I'm not going to do it. Like, no, you go and you get paid. This is not even a decision. Like you guys both seem to be this, like, oh, this must have been a brutal decision for him to make. I'm like, no, to me, this is an easy decision. You go down south and you get paid, especially because if it is a six-figure deal down there, especially the exchange rate, even if he's a backup in the CFL, it's going to take him 2 years to make that money in the CFL that he would have made with the Terrapins.
For the record,
JC, what's your price?
I'll just note that Drew Brown had 26 starts.
Fair enough.
At the FBS level, at an additional 11 in JUCO, Yes, he was a backup in his final seasons with Oklahoma State, but he was a guy who would play a ton to that
fair
stage.
Enough, fair enough.
My number is probably close to 500 grand. I think that's what it would take for me to justify the potential risk to my pro prospects in sitting there and being a backup. Because again, I'm not sure if you go and Washington gets hurt and you end up playing 9 games and you do well, that helps you a ton in the NFL eyes either. They want proven long-term production. It probably helps you a little bit, but I think you're putting yourself in a fairly tough spot in that scenario. 500 grand to me, that's enough to say, hey, if I don't have that pro career show up, then I've made a decent chunk of change and I can move on with the rest of my life. The last thing I'll say as a rebuttal to Hodge is, based on your logic, Christian Villiers is going number one overall in your mock draft, right?
What makes you think that?
He started many games in the NCAA. He's got talent. So
he was the backup at Georgia State this year.
Yeah, and Cal Withers about to be a backup at Maryland.
Yeah, I didn't say Cal Withers is going to be Christian Villiers first overall pick. What I'm saying is that the CFL teams who like Cal Withers right now are still going to be happy to take him if he's a backup in 2026. That's what I'm saying. The CFL teams that like could he have raised his CFL draft stock in 2026? I don't think he could have. And if he could have, it would have been minimal. And also with the slotted money, you don't even really get paid more for going in round 2 versus round 6. It's the same.
But investment matters. Teams are less likely to cut a second, third, first rounder than they are a guy in the 7th round.
Well, you know who's going to be doing some investing? Cal Wither, after he's checking those Terrapin checks, baby.
Let me give you guys a real example, and I hesitate to do this, but when I was at the University of Guelph, scholarships were not a thing. I'm just trying to illustrate here how far U-Sports has come, but also the catastrophic difference between Canadian university football and NCAA football. For me, I thought it was great that I was able to do laundry for the team and count that as an hour of work and get paid and got a job on the grounds crew in the summer so I could stay around the university. Even though I did live in Guelph, I grew up on a family farm outside the city. So I wanted to be at the university working out, doing all the footwork sessions to be ready for the season and the rest. That to me was great. So Hodge, I never thought about it this way, but you saying $1 actually resonates with me because I think my price, it would be higher, would not be $1, but it would be a substantial amount above what I made doing laundry in the locker room and being on the grounds crew. So I'm trying to tabulate that quickly in my head, but honestly, $50,000 US, I'm going to Maryland for a number of reasons, like, especially
see,
if I was Cal Wither.
I don't buy that for a second, Dunk, because you're competitive as hell. I don't think you would have given up a starting job to go down. I think you would have been deeply unsatisfied.
Trey Ford, in 4 years in the Canadian Football League, has made approximately $400,000 US. So what you're saying, JC, is I need more than 4 years of earnings from Trey Ford to go down south and again, not even really hurt my stuff. Your answer makes no sense to me. No.
Yeah. If I'm Cal Wither and I'm expecting to be in that Trey Ford, Taylor Elgersma realm of quarterbacks after another good season, and I don't buy for a second, Hodge, that he can't help his stock. I think that is a flawed take.
Can he not raise his stock at Maryland? They've got like 18,000 coaches on their staff. How many full time coaches
his
does Laurier have?
If he plays, I don't think it's a and he had all that coaching
Bring
at Ohio
tape, practice tape in the Big Ten.
You don't think you can get better not playing in games, especially at a school with endless resources?
There has been many a D1 backup that has somehow gained who was the kid from Syracuse a number of years ago who got CFL eligibility national status? How much did his backup tape help him?
Again, you've already argued, though, the quarterback is different. The CFL has
that's quarterback tape. It's a one-to-one comparison.
Who's the Syracuse kid?
Look him up.
Dungy? Something Dungy?
I don't remember.
You know who I'm talking about, though, right?
Yeah,
I actually don't know. We should move on,
fellas. Hold on. I drove a truck around the campus. The tradespeople. I need to factor that in. So 100,000. JC, to your point, the competitive aspect has different sides to it, right? If you're Cal Wither, you've dominated in U Sports, to Hodge's point. That film is there. But if you get that chance to go to the NCAA and do it at what a lot of people believe is the highest level of football, that's enticing as well. And the money is absolutely a factor. You know, I think my price would be $100,000. If I'm going to get $100,000 guaranteed, and I'm not saying he's getting it guaranteed, I'm just talking about this hypothetical situation, then I would be going down there because nothing in the pros is guaranteed. It doesn't matter how high you get picked. I think that's Hodge's point here. You got one year left. And I think, to be honest, it actually shows Cal Withers' maturity that he has made this decision, because you're thinking longer term here. I've heard some rumors around U Sports that there's people that don't even dress on some of these teams that think they're going to the NFL. So if you're Cal Wither, you're sitting down and going, okay, how actually realistic is it that not only do I get to the NFL and sign a contract like Taylor Elgersma did, but that I go to the next step and earn cold, hard U.S. cash in the NFL? That you really need to be in the 1% of the 1%, right? To be on an active NFL roster or to be on a practice squad. So when you have that cash being backed up to you, I think that's a smart long-term decision for Cal Wither. Some scouts might not like it, but you put that decision in front of anybody else. Hey, we're going to pay you, let's say hypothetically, hundreds of thousands of dollars to do the same exact thing that you would be doing at Laurier, but do it at Maryland, and you get that money guaranteed? If that was the offer, and I'm speculating you've got to take it.
If a CFL team, or I'll just broaden it to a professional team, college team too, but we're talking about the pros. If a professional team really wants you, they will put up with you driving drunk. They will put up with you sexually harassing people. They will put up with you showing up late. They will put up with you being an absolute idiot on and off the field if they really want you. And if they don't really want you, then they're just going to get rid of you right away. So the thought of, oh, Cal's hurting his chest, it's like, really? If a team really wants him, the idea that they're going to hold it against him, that he decided to be a backup in the Power Four instead of starting at U Sports, is ridiculous. I'm sorry.
JC, you want one final take here?
I think it's heavy speculation that at this stage, a team really wants Cal Wither. Maybe they do. But to me,
if they don't, then just go get the bag.
I'm looking at a 10-game sample size. I want to see more. If I'm going to invest anything in a quarterback, and if I was a quarterback, I'd want to give them as much tape as possible.
JC, there's guys who have played less. There's guys who have played more. We're talking about getting paid. You're going to turn that down? JC Abbott, here's $100,000 USD guaranteed for your final year. What are you doing?
I'm not taking it.
He's watching Game of Thrones. That's what he's doing.
I'm not a money vote motivated person at all. And nobody at Harvard listened to this, please. But it's not a motivating factor to me.
I was just going to say, I want JC's paycheck too now. If he doesn't want it, I'll take it.
I might give it to you, Hodge, to be honest.
Heck yes. Make it out to cash.
I'm going to be haunted by this Syracuse quarterback all day. I need you guys to know this.
That's fine.
Justin, bring us your budget. And JC,
we'll let you get in.
Look up his weird quarterback.
It's time to talk about Hodge's first 2026 CFL mock draft. It's highly anticipated. Going to drop on the weekend at 3downnation.com, but he's going to give you a little tease here on the podcast. Take us through some selections and key names for the fans to know.
So it's going to be two rounds, top 20 picks, because there's two bonus selections at the end of the second round. They've been given to Edmonton and Winnipeg this year as a result of them having the two highest percentage of snaps played by Canadian players in 2025. And this mock has gone through several dozen iterations. It is a super fun project to put together. It's also an absolutely infuriating, maddening process to put together. I love doing mocks and I hate doing mocks. I think I have it locked in for what's going to be published. It has changed a little bit. Pro day season has already began. Giordano Vaccaro has already done his pro day at Purdue. There was the Rutgers pro day with two top picks, linebacker Dariel Jabom and defensive back Jet Elad there. And those have changed my mock a little bit, as has a recent move with the Toronto Argonauts. So I'll just start off here. I think the Ottawa Redblacks are going to go offensive line at the first pick. I don't think they super need an offensive lineman, but there are four offensive linemen, at least right now. There's a blue chip, I'll say a Joel DeBlanco type of offensive lineman who is currently working to get added to this draft class, who is not yet right now officially in. So they have not been factored into this mock, but stay tuned to 3Down Nation for when and if this individual is added to the draft class, potential first overall pick for sure. But the Red Blacks, to get one of these top four offensive linemen, are going to have to take one at one, I believe, because they're all going to be gone by the time they're up to bat at pick 10, top pick of the second round. So I've got them taking Giordano Vaccaro out of Purdue. To me, he's a 10 to 12 year CFL starter at guard or center. He, I think, practiced mostly center at Purdue in 2025. He did play some guard again at the end of the year. He dominated at the University of Manitoba. Winnipeg native, comes from a great family, super smart kid, good head on his shoulders. He's a can't-miss prospect. It wouldn't surprise me, by the way. There were seven teams at his pro day. Wouldn't surprise me if another team tried to pry this pick out of the hands of the Ottawa Redblacks, specifically to take Vaccaro. At two, I've got Darius Bell, offensive lineman out of East Carolina. Bell has started across the offensive line during his tenure down south. To me, he projects mostly as a CFL guard with some center upside as well. He did start for the Pirates at center in 2025. A month ago, I wouldn't have said that the Argonauts needed an offensive lineman, but there are three starters who are projected. Ryan Hunter, Dakota Shepley, and Peter Nicastro are all expensive. They're all aging. And they just lost a blue chip offensive lineman in Sage Dockstader, former second round pick who started 12 games for them. And they've got an injury to Aneem Donkwa, who they seem to like there. So I think if you're the Argonauts, you go offensive line. Part of the reason I think that is because seven CFL teams were at the Rutgers Pro Day. Toronto, one of the two teams that was not there. If you're thinking about taking the DB, the top linebacker, you have to be there. They weren't there. That surprised me, so I'm mocking an offensive lineman. Edmonton's offensive lineman is offensive line is stocked. I've got them taking Dariel Jabom out of Rutgers. His 4.8 40-yard dash was a bit of a letdown, but this kid literally checks every other box. Was a team captain. Excellent testing. Otherwise, 6'1", 233 pounds. The Elks are going to start Joel DeBlanco this year. They do not have any depth behind him. That is Canadian. Jabom is the perfect fit for them positionally. And yeah, the 4.8 is not a great 40-yard dash. However, I went and looked at a bunch of very good recent CFL middle linebackers, and a bunch of them ran in that range. Jovan Santos Knox ran a 4.8 coming out of Massachusetts. Niles Morgan ran a 4.8 coming out of college. I listed a whole bunch of them in the article that I wrote. Jeffrey Canton-Narcou would be a recent Canadian example. Ran a 4.85 at Memphis. Guess what? He plays a lot faster than that. At four, I've got the Winnipeg Blue Bombers taking the best offensive lineman available. This I have as Jonathan Dennis. Probably is technically Denis. I believe he says Dennis. Born in Montreal, but raised mostly in the States. Finished his collegiate career at Louisiana Tech. At five, I've got the Hamilton Tiger Cats taking Jet Elad. I think he could provide some versatility for them. He's better in the box than he is at safety, but he could provide some nice depth behind Stavros Katsantonis, upgrade their special teams units, and potentially even play a little bit of weak side linebacker. I think he's heavy enough, just over 200 pounds if they need him to. And then at six, I've got the Calgary Stampeders taking the last of the top offensive linemen. This is Nicholas Henning, the first U Sports player off the board out of Queens. Henning, by all accounts, is going to absolutely destroy the testing at the CFL Combine. Could even get some NFL looks as a result. A true 6'6", 290-pound blocker. Mostly played H-back with the Golden Gales. Has only played O-line for 2 years, but was a first-team All-Canadian at offensive tackle in 2025. At seven, I've got the BC Lions taking Noor Gatkoth out of Wake Forest. The Lions don't particularly need a defensive lineman, but they do start one. They have upside with Hayden Harris, a second-round pick last year. Why not take Gatkoth? He's there. He had 21 pressures for the Demon Deacons this past season coming off the edge. Should have athleticism enough to on the upside to contribute on special teams. And then rounding out the first
round. Oh, you're giving this all the way, man. This is supposed to be a tease.
I'm going all the way. You guys can pop in if you want to. I'm going all the way. Nick Senekal, receiver out of Hawaii, had a bit of a down year in 2025, got hurt. But the Alouettes, looking at their depth chart, the only spot I really see a lack of Canadian depth is behind behind Tyson Philpott. I was about to say Tyrell Ford, wrong twin. But behind Tyson Philpott at wideout, Senekal is the perfect player to fill that role. And he's from Montreal, which is a nice little bonus. And then finally, at the ninth overall spot, I've got defensive back Malcolm Bell out of Michigan State to the Saskatchewan Roughriders. If he runs well, Bell is going to be in an NFL camp. He's 6'2", 200 pounds as a corner. I've had sources tell me he's going to run sub 4.5. I've had some tell me he's going to run in the 4.5s. We won't know until his pro day later this month. But I think he is the perfect heir apparent to Tavon Campbell in Ryderville. I think Malcolm Bell would be well worth waiting on for a year or two if that's what it takes. And we have seen the Riders take futures in the past, even in the first round, Kyle Hergel being a perfect example from a couple years ago at third overall. So that's how the first round of the mock is looking right now. It is subject to last minute change, but I do think I'm mostly locked in on the first round, second round, which we'll save for the written piece. I think could be tweaked, but I'm curious for your thoughts, particularly JC, just because I know he's a little more dialed into the draft stuff.
Like where you've gone with a lot of these selections, Vassaro to me is the number one overall guy. I know some people think he's limited as a center only prospect. I don't care. I think he can be an elite all-star center in the CFL. He's aggressive. He's mobile. I think Purdue put him in a awkward situation with the timing of getting him down there. That's part of the reason why he wasn't on the field very much last year. And I think he is a much more dynamic athlete, a much more physical athlete than he was able to show south of the border. I love that pick. I think some of the spots that I look at and maybe find issue with, Toronto going Darius Bell number two. I'm far more lukewarm on Bell compared to some of the other offensive linemen in this class. I see some flaws in his game. I know that Toronto now has a bit of a need at offensive line after cutting ties with Sage Dockstager. But I like Gavin Cokes, who we didn't see at all last year because of injury. I think he was a fantastic piece on that UBC Thunderbirds offensive line and can really be a sneaky addition there. I don't think they're desperate. And I look at some other spots on their roster, and I wonder if they would be better off reinforcing their receiver specifically is one for me where I wonder about their depth. They got Kevin Mattal. I know David Unger III has been a decent piece for them at times, but Ezekiel Tiede and Tristan Reddy are the two backups at this stage. I wonder if you would take a swing at somebody like a Nick Senekal that high up, because I think he is sort of one in this draft as a guy who can threaten deep as a Canadian receiver. And then the person that I think can benefit themselves the most or rise up this first round mock the most in the coming days is Malcolm Bell, for all the reasons that you laid out. If he does not run well, I think his NFL opportunities will be limited. And with the amount of teams that are now employing Canadian corners, think Edmonton, Calgary, Saskatchewan, I think there is genuine demand at that position. And this is a kid who's 6'2", who has started games at Michigan State, at UConn, who has been a legitimate lockdown guy for big-time FBS programs. I think he would be highly coveted by some of those teams as an immediate backup and a potential heir apparent.
Thank gosh JC's talking about something other than offensive linemen. I love my big boys up front, but we got to get little time for these skill guys. I'm very curious to see what Bell does at his pro day. A very intriguing prospect, but you guys know the most intriguing prospects always the Canadian quarterbacks. Who's going to be the first Canadian quarterback off the board, and what range? Hodge, I'll start with you.
Christian Veilleux, I mean, he's going to be the first one off the board if it's as a quarterback. I think Iloa Latondres Reginbald out of McGill could be the first quarterback taken. I'm not sure he projects as a CFL quarterback. I don't know where these guys are going to go. Neither are in consideration for my mock draft. Veilleux's collegiate career pointed down, right? Like, he started games at Penn State early in his career and transferred to lower level schools multiple times and finished his collegiate career as a backup. I'm not saying he doesn't have a future in professional football, but I don't think that the quarterback spot is going to factor in heavily to the top portion of this draft. And I will say, I think it's a good idea just to give people kind of a general overview. There are a couple quarterbacks who are, in my opinion, worth drafting up near the top, but overall, it's not like this is a crazy quarterback class. It is not a particularly strong running back class. There are some really intriguing fullback, tight end, H-back types.
It's a fantastic class for fullback, tight end, H-backs.
So I love how JC was like, okay, I'm not going to talk about O-line, but yes, let's go to the next most interesting position. We'll double down on the H-back. So receiver is not super strong, but there are some good receivers. Offensive line is strong, and this is the first strong O-line draft in a while, which is why I think you're going to see upwards of four go in the first six picks. D-line, there are lots of good defensive linemen. Backer is a little bit top heavy, but there are some other good ones. Justin Pace is a U Sports player. I'm probably going to mock in round two, but there are some other ones who I think could be in the mix. And there are some really nice DBs. Like, to me, I would say probably the two lines of scrimmage are the strongest positions. And then receiver and running back would maybe be at the bottom. Is that fair for you, JC, do you think?
I'm a little bit more lukewarm on the D-line. I think defensive end, certainly there's some high-end guys, but I think there's a lot of sort of workhorses rather than stud players as you get lower down. There's a lot of NCAA talent, but not necessarily guys who were super productive pass rushers, sort of your run-stopping, reliable defensive ends who might project inside at the CFL level. There's not a ton of true defensive tackles. So I have some questions, some things that I'm still sorting out there. But certainly, I really like the offensive line class. I think there's a lot of talent there and some guys who could really be some nice picks. And I like the DB class as well. I think there is some quality players to be found in the defensive secondary.
So that's the mock. Last year in the top 19 picks, I had 17 of the correct players. They weren't necessarily slotted in the perfect spot,
but I went back and looked last year.
And one of those 19 was Tiger Shanks, who was not in the draft when I put out the mock. So in a way, I went 17 of 18. And again, lots of them.
That was your first mock or last mock?
In my first mock, like pre-combine. So I'm not saying that I'm going to get a bunch of these picks perfect, but I am hopeful that the vast majority of these guys, if I've mocked them in the first two rounds of this mock, they'll be first two round picks in the actual draft. Because I know,
in other words, it ain't the CFL Scouting Bureau top 20 where guys are on it and they go undrafted. Okay. You look at Hodges' mock, and there's a darn good chance those guys are going at the top of the draft.
I do think the Scouting Bureau's gotten better in recent years. But there are some guys who aren't on it right now who I do think will be first rounders. And there are some guys who are not on it, or at least one in Nicholas Henning. And I do think there are a couple guys on it who will not be picked in the first three rounds. I think they'll all get picked, but it's better than it has been in the past. There have been some years in the past going back, you know, when I first started doing this 8, 9, 10 years ago that were a bit of a joke. The last few years, I found it to be a lot more accurate. But regardless, it is a CFL draft. It's one of the least predictable drafts in sports. So, you know, if somebody blows up a pro day, all of a sudden they might fall down the CFL draft board because the NFL is coming after them. Or if a guy has a terrible pro day, they might actually go up CFL draft boards because it's like, oh, everybody thought that guy was going to NFL. All of a sudden now they look like they're available. So it's a weird event to cover. It's a fun event to cover. But stay tuned for all the latest on the pro days because, you know, I think CFL fans, a lot of our listeners, viewers, you know, guys like Jeffrey Canton-Narcou, guys like Tyson Philpott, guys like Tyrell Ford, you know, guys like, this one a little older, but Tavon Campbell, Samuel Emmels.
Like,
these are household names now, but when you go back to when we were covering like their pro days, or their collegiate careers, people are going, why the heck are you writing about this guy? It's like, well, it's because in the case of Brady Oliveira, he's a future MOP. Or in the case of Tyson Philpott, he's a future Grey Cup MVP, or at least MOC, or MVC, Most Valuable Canadian. But these are genuinely bona fide star players who are household names. Yeah, there's lots of guys who bust. I see that from CFL draft critics sometimes. It's like, well, some of these guys don't do anything. And it's like, well, welcome to every draft. There's no draft in professional sports where it's like, wow, the 30 best players all got taken with the top 30 picks. Like Max Crosby was a fourth round pick, right? And that might have even been the same year Trey Lance was the third overall pick, right? Like there's crazy, silly things that happen in every draft. It is always a guess. It is always a projection, but there are great players who have come through the CFL draft every year, and this is no exception. There's going to be some guys in this draft. I don't want to go as far as to say Hall of Fame, but there are going to be players in this draft who make all CFL teams, who make all division teams, and win championships. And like, not just as, oh, I was the backup long snapper and we won, but guys who start games, who are massive contributors, big reasons why their teams are successful, and I'm looking forward to seeing where they all end up.
For the record, Doug, I didn't get a chance to answer your quarterback question, so I'll say this right now. Christian Veilleux, I personally wouldn't draft him. I think there's potentially some value in the later rounds just to get another non-counter arm in camp. To me, the only quarterback worth a selection is Aloha Latendresse Régimold, and that is under... only if he is willing to not be a quarterback anymore. I think he has some value given his size and athleticism as a potential receiver convert. We will see as we get to the CFL Combine if he is willing to make that adjustment. But to me, it's not the quarterback class that we saw with Elgrisma and Rourke and Senecal and Desjardins a year ago. These guys aren't that. As an aside, I did find our Syracuse quarterback while we were discussing this.
Well, and stop Hodge, the presses.
Hodge, I got to call you out here because he signed with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers while you were on the beat.
Come on, Hodge.
You could not even remember his name. Zach Mahoney out of Syracuse.
What
Zach
year Mahoney, was this?
2018. He was there for rookie camp.
I have literally zero memory of this.
That's how much you hate Canadian quarterbacks.
Oh, I'm not a Canadian quarterback hater. I'm pretty good, actually, at remembering niche CFL quarterbacks. I do not remember Zach Mahoney. But that's almost 10 years ago. I have noticed this, by the way. When I first got into like really interacting with people who work in the CFL, a lot of them were impressed at my memory going back like 10 to 15, 20 years is like niche players or things that happened. And I was almost surprised at how little they remembered prior to just a few years earlier. But the way that they described it to me was like, when you're in personnel every day, like the new players kind of take up the memory that the old players would have, if that makes sense. It's like your brain is deleting old players to add new players like a computer. And now I fully experience that. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, I forgot that guy was a player. Whatever happened to him? And then I look and be like, oh, he was in the 2019 draft class. That's not like that long ago. As I've gotten into it more and more, I have found that same thing happening to me. So sorry, Zach Mahoney. I hope you're having fun, whatever it is you're doing these days. Several Canadians and former CFL players signed new contracts during NFL free agency this past week, including Alex Singleton, Benjamin St. Juste, Dean Leonard, David Onyemata, Neville Gallimore, D. Alford, John Metchier III, and Jesse Lukita. Which deal was the most significant?
Well, there is some big money being thrown around for these Canadians and ex-CFL players, but the deal that stuck out the most to me, gentlemen, was D. Alford getting a 3-year, $21 million contract with the Buffalo Bills. And the big piece of why this deal stuck out, it's not just because of the length and the overall value, but over $10 million of that contract is guaranteed, which is almost double what he has made thus far in his NFL career. You know, Alford has been a nice nickel piece for the Atlanta Falcons, has started a bunch of games, but has been maligned at times, inconsistent, not always the most popular with fans as a result. I wonder if there was some parallels there to another guy who came out of the CFL, got a deal, started games in the NFL, and then flamed out in Delvin Bro. That's not going to be the case with D. Alford, because this massive contract proves that the Bills are invested in him. He is gone for good from the CFL, and he is going to be a very wealthy man for years to come.
It wasn't the richest deal, but I'm going to stick with my U Sports theme for this episode on the 3 Down Nation podcast and go with Dean Leonard. He was selected by the Los Angeles Chargers in the NFL draft, and the Chargers have liked him enough to re-sign him. It might be a more modest deal by NFL terms when you look at it, 1 year, $2 million, but the fact that the Los Angeles Chargers want to keep him, I think speaks volumes about how Leonard has been able to make the jump from different levels. JC, you got a snivel again, or are you okay?
I'm sick, sorry. Sue me.
Making sure. I thought you were mouth breathing for a second, but I remembered you were sick. So to me, it's Leonard because he's jumped from the University of Calgary to Ole Miss to now the NFL, made himself a legitimate player down there. He's already earned over $3.7 million USD. So, you know, after this year, presumably with the Chargers, if he's there all year round, I would imagine he would be. He's going to be over $5 million in his NFL career. U Sports to the NFL, it can happen and is consistently happening. Good job, Dean Leonard.
For me, it's Neville Gallimore, and maybe this is a bit of an off-the-board pick. Like, Alex Singleton is the biggest name on this list. David Onyemata is getting paid the most money. By the way, David Onyemata, another example of U Sports to NFL. By the time his deal with the Jets is done, he'll have made over $75 million U.S. dollars in the NFL. That is an almost unimaginable amount of money for the average person. Like, that is insane. But the reason I say Gallimore is because I love Gallimore coming out of Oklahoma. He's so athletic along the interior. He's got power in his hands. He's got some length. Like, I thought he was going to be a great NFL player. He started a ton of games for the Cowboys as a rookie, a third-round pick. And then he got hurt in 2021, never really got back into the starting lineup consistently. And then he went to the Dolphins after his rookie deal ended, and he actually got cut by the Dolphins at the end of training camp. Like, he was almost a bubble guy where it's like, man, is he going to make a roster? Is he not? And I remember just being shocked. Like, I thought this guy was so good. Well, fortunately for him, he caught on with the Rams in 24 as kind of a rotational guy, started a bunch of games for the Colts in 25, and now he has signed a 2-year, $12 million deal with the Bears. He has made, obviously, good money in the NFL. He's been in the NFL for 5-6 years now. But the reason why I'm so thrilled for him is this is the first, like, big money deal. And I know that relative to other contracts, maybe $6 million a year isn't a quote-unquote big money deal. But to me, it is a lot of money relative to what he's made previously. And I think that he deserves it. So good for Neville Gallimore. I didn't think it was going to take this long for him to get paid, but he finally got paid. Good for Neville.
David Onyemata not playing one down of football until he got to the University of Manitoba. It just adds to what Hodge said. He'll be over $75 million, JC, and he didn't even start any games in high school. Imagine that. Tailgating is officially coming to Mosaic Stadium as the act was given royal assent at the provincial legislature. Is this a positive?
I don't know what royal assent means, but I'm going to say yes, obviously. And honestly, I'm kind of disappointed at the response to this. Like, I've seen so much negativity online. The Riders recently, relatively recently, made a lottery system available for anyone who wants to get a tailgating spot. If selected, individuals will have to pay $500 to tailgate. And I've seen so much negative feedback, like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. You're charging to tailgate. And it's just laid out by the Riders in their press release. You get two parking spots, one for your vehicle and one to sit and tailgate and visit. And the tailgating area is open to anybody who wants to go through. In fact, the Riders are encouraging fans to go and participate in the tailgating and have fun hanging out. But these tailgating spots are at the footprint of Mosaic Stadium. These are like premium parking spots for the year, and you get two spots. So essentially, it's the equivalent of $50 a game with two parking spots. It's like $25 a game. Like, I think to park that close to the stadium is worth $25 a game to me. And that's without getting the chance to sit and enjoy all your own drinks and all your own food for hours and hours and hours before the game. Like, to me, this is awesome. I think it's totally reasonable. And again, even if you're someone who's like, I don't really want to sit in the parking lot for 5 hours, but it would be fun to walk through and, like, say hi to people and, you know, enjoy the music that people are playing, or, you know, have some of the food that people might be offering. Like, yeah, it's great. Like, the tailgating is amazing in lots of places around this league and across the country. I've been at the tailgating for the Caravan Rouge Or game that's held every year in Quebec City. The tailgating in Winnipeg is very good. I haven't been to the tailgating in Calgary, but I hear it's very good, right? Like, this is part of the fabric and the culture of football. And, like, I wasn't there this year, but in 2024, I was at the Labor Day Classic in Regina. The only thing that was missing, like, there was a ton of outdoor activities. There was green space for people hanging out. The only thing missing was hundreds of people barbecuing and having drinks and having a good time and having fun right under the stadium, right? Instead of that, we had, you know, nothing until people could park for the game, and then they were just parking and going inside. So tailgating is awesome. It's a part of the culture. This is going to elevate the experience at Mosaic Stadium. It's going to elevate the experience for Rider Nation. I love it. And I don't understand the negativity of, oh, they're charging people to tailgate. No, it's free to access. If you want to park your car for hours and hours and hours and have room to tailgate, then it costs money. But to me, this is great. It's a win-win. I can't wait to, at Labor Day Classic, wander through this area and enjoy the sights and the sounds and the smells.
This has just made too much sense for too long. I have no idea why it hasn't happened already at this stage. If you go to Mosaic Stadium, it is tailor-built for this type of activity. I am glad that government and business could align on this occasion and get something done that should hopefully make one of the best environments in the CFL even better.
It's going to be a great spot. As Hodge said, it's a premium area right beside the stadium. I have heard about Calgary's tailgate experience a lot from Ryan Ballantyne and been through it myself. It is really good because of the way that parking lot, in a way, like, wraps around part of the stadium. I think it's unique that way, but in Saskatchewan, for people who haven't been to Mosaic Stadium, the Brand Center is essentially right across the street from Mosaic Stadium. That's where the Western Hockey League team, the Regina Pats, play. And also there's a whole bunch of events that go on there. There's an indoor facility where the CFL Combine was held. So there's parking lots sort of on both sides of the Brand Center, if you will, and if you will. And I think it will make for a great tailgating because you can just walk a few steps to the game and get in there at Mosaic Stadium. I think it's just great when you can have more areas for football fans to gather pregame and postgame, chop it up about football on a nice summer day, be outside, you know, even longer. It's not like now if you're a Rough Rider fan, you just drive to the game, you know, perhaps you hang out at the Sports Cage Lounge before or afterwards, and that place is pretty unique, but that's in the stadium. So you have to be actually let in there. Now you could come hours and hours and hours before games, hang out, do your thing, tailgate. You know, who knows when it will open and shut down. But I think that this is really cool. It's a great initiative by the Riders to get this done. And it just makes too much sense. I think a lot of people wished it would have happened years ago.
The Montreal Alouettes will host 2026 training camp in Quebec City. What does that mean for both markets? I'm pretty sure it means the CFL is expanding to Quebec City right now, right? Right?
Well, let's not go that far quite yet, but I think that that is, if not an intentional part of this plan, certainly a nice fringe benefit that training camp's going to be hosted at PEPS, the facility at the Université Laval, where the Rouge et Or play. That's going to give the Alouettes access to some fantastic facilities, which will be nice for them. But it gives the CFL a chance to sort of gauge how a team might function in Quebec City, which is not something they've had the opportunity to do. And it's certainly an indication that there's more cooperation between the Laval Rouge et Or and the Alouettes than there have been in years past, which was also always seen as a hurdle to putting a team in Quebec City. You see some of the positive statements made in the press release. Of course, that is all shone up nice and shiny for the media. But I think that indicates that there's some genuine cooperation between these two Quebec institutions, and that bodes well for any hopes of expansion. It has been over 10 years since the CFL was in Quebec City in any significant way. That was an exhibition game between Montreal and Ottawa back in 2015, which was not well attended, because it did not have the full support of the Laval Rouge et Or. Now that you do have that support, I wonder what else could develop from this relationship.
My very first thought was exactly what Hodge alluded to for a number of reasons. The rivalry between Montreal and Quebec City is heated. Just look at the Canadiens and the Nordiques over the years when those two cities had NHL teams. And then also, you consider the fact that in July 2023, Jacques Tanguay, who essentially is the Laval Rouge et Or football boss, said, "We can't even think about it," when doing a French language interview, and he was asked about the potential for a CFL team, franchise, I should say, to be in Quebec City. Well, I would imagine, and this is pure speculation, that that has at least changed a little bit, because now Laval is allowing Montreal to come in there, the Alouettes that is, and hold their training camp at their facility. And for those that don't know, the Laval Rouge et Or facilities as a whole are miles, light years, galaxies better than what the Alouettes currently play in at Percival Molson Stadium. I get that you can be really close to the players there, but for all different sorts of reasons. The stadium at Laval, exceptional. The indoor facility there is state of the art. It's very nice. The locker room, although it might not be the greatest, it is definitely better than what is at Percival Molson Stadium. So anyone with a brain that knows Canadian football can't help but think Is this, even if it is a small test case, a test case for exactly what JC said, how a CFL team might, and the keyword is might, function? Because I do think there is a benefit to the Alouettes here. You get into the second biggest market in Quebec, but I also think you can expand the scope and look at it from this perspective. How will the team be covered in Quebec City when they hold training camp there? Is it any different? Do people in Quebec City feel some type of way about a team from Montreal having their training camp there? I think that's a legitimate angle. But the key one for the Canadian Football League, even if they're not going to come out and say it, is how is the CFL generally received in the market? And I think it shows, even if it's small, that according at least to Mr. Tongay in July 2023, that the league has made some headway here in that market. Otherwise, Jacques Tongay would have said, nope, get out of here. The university wouldn't be promoting the fact that training camp is there. I think this is more than just a training camp going to Quebec City. The future will tell us what it might be able to turn into, but that was my initial thought when I saw that this was actually real and happening.
I think that they should have tailgating at Laval during the Montreal.
Tailgating at Laval is amazing.
It is.
They literally set up like zip lines. They're there before the crack of dawn for Laval Rougeur home game. Sorry, Hodge, to cut you off, but it is elite. The people in Quebec City love their football, love their Rougeur, and show up. Sorry.
Well, I hope that the preseason game happens there. It's probably too early to do, or too late to do that for 2026. But if this goes well in 26, wouldn't it be great for the Alouettes to play a preseason game at Peps in Quebec City in 2027? I think that'd be great. I do think we should note, like, as we've talked about on the show, there are some shortcomings with that stadium. Half the seating is bench seating on gravel. It's not pro level, but the seating at Percival Molson is also not necessarily pro level, and they've had
out games there. You could easily add to that stadium and have a CFL
agreed,
team
agreed.
There.
Agreed.
Easily.
So I think this is a step in the right direction. And, I mean, we all know Pierre-Carlo Peladeau with his hockey team has ties to Quebec City. So maybe, you know, maybe he's played a role in this. I would love to know. Mr. Peladeau typically does media once a year. So hopefully when he does his media once a year, he'll get asked about it. And we'll glean some information. Might also be interested to hear Jacques Tongay talk about this as well. So it's a brand new announcement, just happened, but I'm encouraged by what appears to be at least a small amount of progress here in what could potentially be the CFL's 10th CFL team, even if it is a very small step.
It's now time for JC's random neglister. And I've got a name this week that may be familiar to people who have been following the lead up to the NFL draft and the All-Star Game circuit. It's Tyron Montgomery, the wide receiver out of John Carroll, who was recently added to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers negotiation list. John Carroll, for the uninitiated, is a tiny, tiny little Division III school, but Tyron Montgomery earned his way up to the Senior Bowl after showing out at the American Bowl and was one of the stars of the week, being up on some serious FBS top-level NFL prospect DBs and generating general acclaim from the media and scouts in attendance. He has a fascinating story, gentlemen. He was a walk-on basketball player at LSU, had never played high school football, but when his basketball journey stopped, he was tossing the ball around with his brother. They said, hey, you can catch this thing pretty well. Started putting clips on YouTube. Eventually caught on with a flag team. Went to flag nationals down in the United States and got a shot with Nichols College, which then turned into a transfer shot to John Carroll. Over the last 2 years at the Division III level, he has put up 176 receptions for, get this, 2,599 yards and 32 tutties, a consensus All-American. It's all going to come down to how this guy tests, if he can truly make good on that Senior Bowl hype, but certainly the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are keeping an eye on him. If the NFL decides that he isn't all that he was cracked up to be at the Senior Bowl, I think they'd like to have him up in camp in Winnipeg.
Hodges' heritage moment. On this day in 2010, the Toronto Argonauts signed running back Corey Boyd. The South Carolina product was a seventh-round pick in the 2008 NFL draft, who dressed for one career game with the Denver Broncos. Boyd then lit it up in the CFL, was on fire as a rookie, rushing for 1,359 yards and six touchdowns, while catching 38 passes for 363 yards and two scores. The two-time CFL All-Star was cut partway through the 2012 season, which was surprising as he led the league in rushing yards at the time. Boyd dressed for six games that same year with Edmonton, but was out of the league after the 2012 season finished. Guys, I don't think you could make an argument that anybody in CFL history burnt brighter but for less time than Corey Boyd.
There's definitely some others, but I think it had to do with his ego that got out of control and some stuff that was going on behind the scenes there. Let's go to the three-minute drill. Sergio Castillo won both Winnipeg Blue Bombers Community Awards for 2025. Bless you, Hodge. Why does he deserve them?
Oh, Serge is just awesome. He's one of the most high-energy people you can be around, and his sense of humor is off the charts. Like, I could literally be a stand-up comedian as far as I'm concerned. So add that into the fact that he's super giving with his time, is so good at making people feel comfortable. I think he perfect selection for both these, and the first ever to win both awards in the same year, which is pretty cool. Braylon Addison retired from the CFL after seven seasons with Hamilton Tiger Cats and Ottawa Red Blacks, earning one all-CFL selection. Were you surprised he hung up the pads?
I wasn't surprised that Addison was done with football. I didn't figure he was going to get a ton of attention in CFL free agency. I indicated as much in a fairly controversial article that he responded to. I guess I was proven right on this occasion, but I will say this. Braylon Addison at his peak was as good as any receiver in the CFL. It was injuries that derailed him. I'm glad he battled through for as long as he did and made a true career out of it. Kudos to him on accomplishing everything he did. The Calgary Stampeders re-signed left tackle Dante Demery through 2027. Was that a significant deal?
I think so. When you got a young left tackle like that who still likely has some upside to realize, lock him down. Good on Calgary. 25-year-old American quarterback Chase Artopias retired from professional football after spending the 2025 season with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I believe he dressed in five games. Hodge, would he have made the roster in Winnipeg in 2026?
Hard to say yes or no, but I mean, Bryce Perkins, former UFL MVP, a guy who started games in the NFL, is going to be in camp. And then Peyton Thorne, who was mentored in part by Kent Austin while he was at Auburn University, started, I think it was close to 40 games for like top tier FBS programs, might have been in tough behind Zach Kolaris and Terry Wilson. Waterloo will host the U Sports East West Bowl for the third straight year. How excited are you for that game?
Not as excited as I used to be. I think there's still value to the East West Bowl. It's always great to see these prospects a year early, get some testing results, however flawed they might be. But since the CFL pulled their support from it a number of years ago, it's gone downhill, and you're starting to see more top level athletes, particularly those from the RSEQ, like powerhouses like Laval at Montreal, opt not to participate at all. That decreases the validity of this game. It decreases the level of competition and makes it a whole lot less fun to watch. I hope U Sports begins to take this stuff seriously in the near future and does something better with the game going forward. The Ottawa Redblacks are returning to TD Place Stadium for training camp after spending last year at Queen's University. Is that a smart choice?
I think it is just simply based on the players' comments in the CFLPA report cards about that experience. I'll just say that. I think the initiative from the team was great to go to a different market, but I think you got a new coach there in Ryan Dinwiddie as the GM as well. You want to keep it in-house, make it easily accessible. This, to me, makes a lot of sense for Ottawa looking to turn things around in 2026. The Calgary Colts have unveiled a coaching staff full of U Sports and CFL connections, including Mike Edom, William Longley, who just retired, and Chris Merchant, who won a Vanier Cup at Western University. Will that help the Colts improve from their 2-6 mark last year?
I think it could, and this is one of the reasons I'm such a proponent of the draft and of the ratio, right? These are all players who played professionally. I mean, Merchant played professionally overseas, but like Longley played over a decade with the Stampeders, and now all of that knowledge that he has from pass pro, run blocking schemes, right, coaching, all those things, special teams, he's going to be able to pass that along to the next generation. Like, I love this ecosystem we have where guys play and they learn so much and they're able to pass that on. I think it's great. I think it's what levels up Canadian football. The BC Lions added quarterback Daquan Finn to their negotiation list following his controversial exit from Miami, Ohio. What happened there?
Well, from what I can gather from the media reports, he essentially quit on the team. With a number of games left, they were still second in the MAC with a chance at a conference championship, and he opted to sit out in order to focus on his preparations for the NFL draft. This was not a situation where he's opting out of a bowl game. This was meaningful games with a title on the line. Certainly an interesting choice. Should be noted, Daquan Finn, not on the BC Lions neg list anymore. He has since been removed. That only lasted a couple of days.
Finally, on a somber note, we'd like to extend our condolences to the friends and family members of Cameron Ontko, who passed away this past week at the age of 33. Ontko played three CFL seasons as a member of the Calgary Stampeders, BC Lions, and Saskatchewan Roughriders, retiring after the 2017 season, citing concerns over his physical and mental health. So we wish the best to Ontko's family and friends. Obviously gone much too soon. For Justin Dunk, JC Abbott, and myself, thank you, as always, for listening, checking out the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the 3 Down Nation newsletter. You can do so right there easily on the front page of our website. It's free. You can cancel anytime. And we'll see you next week for our next episode of the pod.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.